From atop Soldier Field, welcome to the Shamrock, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on-demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Matt Fortuna after... Well, let's just get it. Like
they won by a lot.
We have covered all 106 of Brian Kelly's wins.
You have.
I've missed one. I'm hoping that you covered Boston College in 2011. But
I covered that one.
It's great. We've covered all of them. And I feel like every time we cover a game of Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, you're like, oh, it was like this one or it was like that one. This one stands alone. I'm completely floored. Still an hour after this one finished, that a game that was Wisconsin was winning 13-10 in the fourth quarter ended with Notre Dame winning 41-13. I don't even know where to start on this one.
I wish we had our friend Loose Emoji with us here just to tell us when's the last time they scored 31 points in any quarter, let alone the fourth quarter. I can't remember when that's happened. Can we actually, here's where we could start. We're going to repeat what we heard in the press room, which was the interview room, which was situated on the other side of the wall of Notre Dame's locker room, so you could hear a lot. And a bunch of us tweeted, as I'm sure you saw, they played Jump Around after playing the fight song. And afterward, an unknown individual, and I do not know who this individual is, although I kind of want to give him a hug because it was like the funniest thing
so
I've heard in
savage.
A while. Someone says, "And time to give the game ball to Graham Mertz."
Oh my God.
Which is not inaccurate, I will say.
Graham Mertz was inaccurate.
Ooh, that's a good one. There were three quarterbacks who played today on this field, and Graham Mertz somehow is the fourth best of them all. I mean, Tyler Buckner, who couldn't play, would have been better than Graham Mertz. I cannot believe, I mean, that was like the talk of the press box, and I know it's a Notre Dame podcast, but I can't believe that guy is, how bad that guy is. Like, it just boggles my mind.
Yeah, it was a wretched performance made even worse by Notre Dame's defense. I mean, we'll get into like the Jack Cohn, Drew Pine, Chris Tyree stuff, but like, I want to start with sort of giving credit to Marcus Freeman in that defense, mm-hmm. because when the offense was struggling in the first half, and really, no, when the offense was struggling through three quarters, the reason that Notre Dame was still in it with a chance to do the unbelievable at the end was that Wisconsin had not converted a third down until midway in the third quarter. They had three first downs in the first half. One of them was from a Kyle Hamilton penalty. And you saw Marcus Freeman, I think we complimented him last week, bring out dime defense. Purdue really struggled with that. Today, what do you do? It's like kind of a 4-4 look with Jordan Botello. Wisconsin really struggled with that. And then, I mean, the game ends. The final two touchdowns are a Jack Kaiser pick six and a Drew White pick six, it was a dominant performance from Notre Dame's defense. Wisconsin finished with 314 yards total offense. They couldn't really run the ball. They sure as hell couldn't throw the ball. Mertz, 18 of 41, 240, a touchdown and four picks. And, I mean, if you could actually play worse than that stat line, Graham Mertz played worse than that stat line.
Before the two pick sixes, so it was what, 27-13. When Notre Dame took the lead on the Chris Tyree return, I thought, all right, this is how they're going to win the game. Like, neither team played particularly great for about 3.5 quarters. And much like last week, Notre Dame just has better players, and those better players are making the game deciding plays.
I mean, Wisconsin doesn't have a former five-star running back like Chris Tyree to bring
Kevin,
a touchdown back.
Or Kevin Austin, or Kevin Austin catch a 36-yard touchdown.
Or Mike Mayer to like have the completion that preceded the Kevin Austin. Right. I mean, they don't have guys like that. And I don't, we spend so much time this week talking about Notre Dame's offensive line, which is talented but not playing well. Could Notre Dame compensate for that? And if you have, look, if you have a kickoff return touchdown, two pick sixes, a few shot plays in there, you can overcome just about anything if you do that.
Yeah, I mean, and last week we said something similar, right? Like, they beat Purdue by 14. They got an incredible touchdown run from Kyron Williams, and then Kyle Hamilton defensively basically stomped out any hope of Purdue being able to do anything. It was similar for a good part of this game. Like, even after that Tyree touchdown, is as energized as it got Notre Dame, like, I don't think anyone felt great about, like, all right, they're winning, but like, this is still a four quarter, 60 minute game. And quickly it turned into something completely unrecognizable. And I thought, you mentioned how we don't have a basis for comparison for this win for Brian Kelly. I thought that was one of the better post game press conferences, more insightful, I should say, from Brian Kelly in a while. Because he just talked a lot about how, like, we're figuring out who we are. you know, people think they figured us out, but we haven't figured ourselves out. And that's the beauty. He's like, that's what I, you know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of opportunities to look back considering the historic nature of this win for Brian Kelly. And I basically said, what I love is, like, I know this team's going to be playing much better in November. I know they're young. I know they're going to be better. I don't know what they're going to look like, but I know they're going to get better every day. And I love their practice habits and I love their preparation. And I think it takes a mature coach to be at a program with the bullseye on your back like Notre Dame, where every game's a referendum on everything, and they easily could have lost multiple games so far this season, to all of a sudden look up and say, hey, we're 4-0. Our best ball may still be in front of us. We just beat the team that was allegedly the best on our schedule by 28 points with a third-string quarterback. That's Notre Dame was playing right. The third-string quarterback, yeah. Not Graham Mertz in Wisconsin. You feel better and better about this team every single week, and I know it's hasn't been the highest of bars to clear, but you got to feel excited if you're a Notre Dame fan right now about, you know, the progress they've shown at all but one position so far this season.
Right, and it's, I mean, what I felt most strongly about this team is that they would be very entertaining to watch, in part because you just were not going to know how it was going to come together on a week-to-week basis. I didn't think it would come together like it came together today, nor do I think, you know, certainly Notre Dame is not a perfect team, nor does Brian Kelly or anybody in the locker room think that they are, but it's a fun team to cover. I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably a fun team to watch, even if they give you a heart attack here and there, in the sense of, like, they've been able to carry over the sort of serial winners attitude that they've had the last 3 years, where you are confident they're going to figure out how to do it, how to put it all together at the end. But it's been a lot more just wild, crazy swings than what you're used to seeing. And, like, I really appreciated sort of Brian Kelly's perspective that, like, it's fun to not know. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, like, that's what I love about sports, right? Is, like, the ability to be surprised, to not sort of pound your chest that, like, I knew this was coming, or, like, I predicted this all to happen. Like, that's one of the reasons this Notre Dame team is fun, is because, like, you don't know where the performance are going to come from. Tyree, Pine, Kaiser, White, Jason Adamilola, Jacob Lacey had a huge fourth down stop, which is not somebody that we would have talked about if Kurt Heinisch was available today. I think that's part of the reason why this team is just, they're not going to go 12-0, but I think that Notre Dame fans in general are going to enjoy the ride that they're on with this team.
I'm not going to say they're going to go 12-0. Okay. I wouldn't rule anything out at this point. I'm getting a little 2012 vibes, a little bit, just because everything's been different week to week, and they seem to be getting better, and their best ball still seems to be ahead of them. And yet, like, you look at that box score, Wisconsin outgained them by 72 yards. They averaged more than one full yard per play, more than Notre Dame did. They sacked Notre Dame six times, really seven. Jack Cohn ran into an offensive lineman on third down on the second drive of the game. That wasn't officially a sack and fell down. A lot of the problems that existed last week still exist this week. They played a fourth different left tackle through four games today. Right. Joe Wall, who wore two different jerseys, which I haven't seen a lineman do that on the same side of the ball probably ever, at least since I've been covering this sport. But it was a weird, fun game. Notre Dame had three rush yards. It's still hard to wrap your head around how they're winning, and yet I keep coming back to Brian Kelly, coming back to some of the comments he had post-game today, and just the way this game shaped out. I mean, I tweeted a big game, and I meant it with all sincerity. Like, this is Brian Kelly breaking a wins record with a backup, and again, people correct me, third-string quarterback, not backup quarterback, is really the most Brian Kelly thing ever, because he has won 106 games at Notre Dame. Not in 106 different ways, but many, many, many different ways, in a way that's hard to diagnose, hard to figure out, but gives you security and confidence if you're in that locker room, if you're a Notre Dame fan, that they're going to find a way to figure it out. And they did that today. I mean, Jack Cohn goes down, and I mean, I can't say, I'm like, part of me is thinking, well, ND hasn't moved the ball that well with him. I don't know what they're going to get out of a guy who hasn't taken a snap in a game since, what, garbage time last year?
Alabama. He came in for the Alabama game.
Exactly.
Briefly.
And you're thinking, like, Mertz can't be this bad, right? Eventually, Wisconsin's going to figure something out. They seem to get a little bit of offensive momentum early in the third quarter when they decided to go underneath and run a couple crossing patterns instead of just running it up the middle for nothing and trying a few deep shots here and there. And yet, the kickoff happens. Pine, even after taking a really bad sack and losing the ball on his second drive, comes right back and leads me down on a touchdown drive to Kevin Austin. And that showed a lot of gumption on his part, a lot of gumption on this program's part, because that's a guy, and I'm glad you asked about him. That can't be easy. He's in a quarterback battle, and I use air quotes when I say that, all spring and all camp, or half a camp with Jack Cohn's here. And no one in the right mind, understandably so, is giving him a chance to win this thing.
Right.
And we're all thinking the real question is who's going to be the number two. And look, if Tyler Buckner's healthy today, maybe it is Tyler Buckner. But you had a question in your mailbag this week, that essentially addressed that head on, which was, if it's this week, it's probably Drew Pine. If it's later in the season, right, it's probably Tyler Buckner. It was Drew Pine today due to circumstances beyond anyone's control. And he played pretty well. I mean, had a touchdown drive, finished 6 of 8. Again, bad fumble, but nothing that no one else on Notre Dame who's taken a snap this year hasn't done with that offensive line this year. So I thought that was pretty impressive. And like, you got to feel a lot better about that room moving forward just because you got tested a little bit there.
It was, yeah, I mean, it was one of those things that Reese has said to us and I think on the NBC broadcast that like the quarterback room is as locked in, as smart as it's ever been. And we're like, all right, that's kind of something you say about whoever's there right now. But like today was evidence that that's true, that they have three quarterbacks that they can win with. I don't know when last season ended if we were confident they were going to have one. So for to sit here after four games, three have thrown touchdown passes, all have been instrumental in wins. It's not like the work that Buckner did against Toledo was garbage time, nor is certainly not the work that Pine did today was garbage time. And then you see sort of Pine celebrate his touchdown pass with the Conor McGregor, whatever that is. Like, there's some like real attitude about this team now, which I do think is like a little bit different from the last years. You have like Kyle Hamilton has definitely come into his own as a guy who can talk some shit, like, and likes doing it to the point that like
Brian Kelly got
a flag defending Hamilton after two Wisconsin players basically pinned Hamilton to the ground on a punt, which seemed pretty cheap.
Yes.
Especially when they high-fived each other after they got off of them.
That was like a bar.
Yeah, that was fairly pretty weak. But even the attitude of Brian Kelly to take a penalty, like, that's kind of one of those things that, like, your locker room notices that. Your players on your roster notice that, like, your head coach has your back, even if it's a 15-yard penalty. It's, like, one that was well worth it, I think, for Brian Kelly in the short term and the long term.
No, and how many games have we covered, wins we've covered, where I wouldn't say they're apologetic for winning, but it's not all smiles afterward. People going into the locker room afterward, like, you can't hear the locker room dancing and singing and talking trash and blasting jump around. They seem to really enjoy being around each other and enjoy being on this journey, for lack of a better term, to wherever this season may take them. It was not the way I think any of us drew it up a month ago, but we did say a month ago they get through Wisconsin at 4-0. Look out. And
the way they got through Wisconsin,
if Desmond Ritter can get a Grand Rapids game ball next week, look out.
I mean, at some point, the offensive line, I think, will trip them up. But I think you asked the question of Kelly about Reese and the way he game planned today and the way he called plays today. Because, I mean, Reese essentially is trying to run a game operation knowing that you can't do much of anything between the tackles. Like, you have to go over it. You have to move people around. I'm not saying that, like, Reese was 100% on point today and this was like a masterclass or anything, but he is game planning in a way that I think that he probably never thought that he would ever have to, especially at Notre Dame.
Not even game planning, adjusting.
Yeah.
I mean, four games, four left tackles, three quarterbacks. I don't know where they rank rushing once week four is done.
Two left guards.
It's probably the worst in the FBS, at least among Power Five, after a 3-yard performance today.
Yeah.
I mean, you're playing left-handed. Like, I know that's the defensive coordinator, like, typical coach cliche, right? You want to make an offense play left-handed. Tommy Reese has had to call games left-handed and really design this offense.
Like, one arm.
Left-handed. So, yeah. I mean, it's like, and again, I think eventually that catches up to you, but to preface all that by then saying they beat a ranked Wisconsin team by 28 points today. Like, that's just mind-boggling.
It's bizarre that, you know, you could have 32 carries for three yards.
With those running backs.
Yeah, I mean, Kyren Williams, I mean, the way that I evaluate the running backs, not to flatter Notre Dame's run game, but I just, you know, forget sacks. Like, tell me how Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree did. Kyren Williams had 18 carries for 33 yards, 1.8 yards per carry. Chris Tyree, 2 carries, 6 yards, obviously 3 yards a carry. That's not...
Sack-adjusted rush yards, 1.6 yards per carry.
Yeah, it just is bizarre that, like, you could be functional that way. You know, that's separate to the question of, like, why is this happening? Because, like, Notre Dame has material on the offensive line. They're not playing well right now, like, obviously. I don't know how that gets turned around. I don't know if that gets turned around. I don't know if this is just something like Reese is going to have to deal with the rest of the season. But that is, I mean, it feels inexcusable to me that Notre Dame would come into a game like this against Wisconsin and essentially have to abandon the running game before the game starts.
It's crazy. And I tweeted it. I know they deleted it. If you want a really good laugh, look at Fox Sports' tweet from earlier this week saying, who would you rather have your coach as your coach? Brian Kelly or Paul Chryst, except the picture wasn't Brian Kelly. It was Jeff Quinn, who's had better years than this one, to put it lightly. I don't know. Like, we had some version of this conversation 2 years ago when they couldn't get the run game going, and they didn't have the quality of running backs they had this year. And not to draw any kind of comparisons or lines, but, like, at the end of the day, like, Chip Long just couldn't work like that. And a lot of other stuff happened and ended up with Chip Long not being a Notre Dame anymore. And Jeff Quinn still is. Now, Notre Dame's obviously done just fine for themselves. They haven't lost a regular season game since then. But at some point, I don't know what the, like, was Chris Watt the best GA in the history of GAs? I mean, it was his first year of coaching, and now he's a full-time coach with Chip Long down at Tulane coaching offensive lines. Like, I don't know what the answer is, especially in season, because, as you said, every criticism we've lobbed that group's way has been deserved, but it's also a group of guys who multiple top 100 signees out of high school, and I don't care how young they are, how different this is for them, like, that should not be happening.
Right, yeah, you can't have that product on the offensive line at Notre Dame. Not with the way that they've recruited, you know, even with Blake Fisher out. I mean, the guys that they're trotting out there are, like you said, top 100 prospects, almost all 4-star prospects, with the exception of Kane Madden, who's really experienced, right? You know, 31 starts at Marshall and starting the first 4 games here. So it's hard to get your head around that. I do think that is probably, you know, Notre Dame will take some interesting steps throughout the course of the season. You know, seeing the defense evolve over the course of 4 games. The quarterback position has evolved over 4 games. I'm not sure if the offensive line is going to, though. It may just be like different versions of this. Maybe some weeks will be more extreme than others. Like Wisconsin, like, you can give Wisconsin some credit for the rush defense. I think they're first in the nation in yards per carry allowed. Notre Dame was never going to run the ball effectively today. I just thought that they would be able to do more than that. But, you know, I would say the rush offense, what you saw against Florida State, Toledo, and Purdue is probably more concerning than what you saw today. Because today, I would have to give Reese and Kelly credit. They didn't try to force it. You know, getting a 1-yard run on 1st and 10 was not any path to success. So, That was the part of the game plan that I really liked. There was a lot of deep shots. There was a lot of aggressive play calling, especially on first down. That was how, like, even though it didn't really work that well, like, Jack Conan wasn't really connecting with Braden Lindsey, you know, had the one connection with Kevin Austin. But that's the way they had to play. I don't know if they'll have to play like that every game the rest of the way, but that has to be, like, on Reese's desk every week. Like, is this a game where we're going to have to throw it 40 times to win because we can't rush it 45 times to win?
Yeah, give Kevin Austin credit. I mean, he really answered the bell after looking completely lost last week. He had to answer the bell, otherwise they probably wouldn't have won this game, and he played great. He had a lot of big catches. He had 2 touchdowns, and it really helped get Notre Dame the lead when things didn't look all that hot for them early on. Cincinnati's rushing defense is not, at least so far, in the same league as Wisconsin's. They're 68th nationally, giving up 138 rushing yards per game, 3.48 yards per carry. The only real opponent I think they played is Indiana.
Yeah.
So shouldn't be as difficult as it was this week. But as you said, like, you you weren't going to fit a square peg into a round hole against that defense on the ground today. You just weren't. And you were going to have to find other ways to move the ball. And they eventually were able to do that. It's not like a broken record, but like I do, again, wonder about the long-term viability of just living that way.
Yeah,
that predictability.
It feels like your luck is going to run out on that at some point.
I'm driving a car and empty.
Yeah,
and I haven't crashed yet, so everything's good. Well, no, like eventually, like that's going to
That's going to have to get fixed. But again, like that's going to have to get fixed if we're talking about Notre Dame as a college football playoff team.
Sure.
That to go 10-2, like they can definitely go 10-2 the way they're playing right now. Like they're because like
you can throw any record out there right now, and I'm just gonna say yeah, like it's a one game season every week, and it's really hard to like they have that internal chemistry and belief that I don't think too many teams have, which gives them the edge in pretty much every game they've played so far. So I could see them win 10 games this year, which is kind of how we predicted it, albeit a much different way,
right,
a month ago. But yeah, you just wonder about for me, again, it's less about, all right, we can't run the ball. We can't rely on our offensive line. We're going to have to out-scheme that versus like, okay, if we're going to throw the ball 50 times a game, like if we have to completely abort the run game and we have to throw the ball 50 times or whatever times a game and our defense is on the field for X number of plays, like those things just catch up to you programmatically. And I don't know how you, as you look at Auburn, I saw your eyes pop out. Yeah. I thought it was something I said. You're like at Auburn losing
to Georgia State. Colorado State beating Iowa.
Oh, wow. That was really surprising. Yeah.
But like the defense, if you can't take a offensive game plan like this and package it week after week after week, like, and I get that. Like, I think that you're onto something. But I do think you can take what they're doing defensively and package it week after week after week. Maybe easier than anything you can do offensively. We've seen Notre Dame live that way and win a ton that way with Clark Lee, and now they're doing it with Marcus Freeman. It's a defense that I think Cam Hart took a huge, huge step today. Like, I had a question last week about, like, you know, has Cam Hart reached dude status? And I was like, I kind of want to see more of that. Well, today we saw more. Cam Hart should go to every practice and show up to every game now as a different person than he did coming into Chicago today. So that's a huge step. The way they rotated defensively was interesting at the back end. You know, getting Jordan Botello and gives Marcus Freeman a new toy to play with. The Ademola twins, I think, are playing great football. Foskey is Foskey. You'll get Heinisch back. There's just a lot to this defense where I think Notre Dame could probably go in every week and say, like, all right, how do we get to 24 points? If we get to 24 points, we'll win the game. Because I don't see anybody putting a lot on them the rest of the season. Now, they haven't played a team like USC or North Carolina in terms of pass first. I guess, Purdue to a certain extent, but not with the material, right? So that'll be a different test. But at this point, considering where we were with Marcus Freeman in Tallahassee 3 weeks ago, man, that guy has changed, I think, a lot of hearts and minds in a short amount of time. And I think he's sort of delivering the way that, that's what Notre Dame thought they were getting the whole time.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that defense has put together back-to-back really, really strong games against their two best opponents, which I wasn't sure if they're going to be able to do that after what we saw against Florida State and Toledo, especially with giving up big plays now. Whether or not Purdue, I don't think a opponent matters. I mean, these two teams are better than Purdue and Toledo, better than Florida State and Toledo. And those two teams were able to make the Irish pay with big chunk plays. And Wisconsin, Purdue were not able to do that. I thought it was an outstanding performance all around. Obviously, the two pick six, you mentioned Cam Hart, the linebackers I thought were great. The two pick sixes from Drew Wright to Jack Kaiser, and I would argue Bo Bauer had the nicest play of all of them when he blitzed on a third and long. Deep in Wisconsin's territory and just was bearing down on Graham Mertz.
Oh, yeah.
Batted down a pass right in his face. Read it from the get-go. It was a great play from start to finish. I've been thoroughly impressed with what this group has shown these past 2 weeks, especially in light of the way they began the season against that level of competition. We'll see if they can keep it up. I mean, USC and Carolina, are completely different animals, especially when it comes to the way they try to stretch you defensively, vertically, but Cincinnati, I don't know. I mean, I was not at all sold on the Cincinnati team at the outset of the season. It's going to be a fun game. I wonder if game day will go there. It's going to be a fun one. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how that comes out.
Top 10 game, right? Like, that's...
No, you're probably right.
That's the real deal next week. So, I do think that, you know, we talk about USC and North Carolina and the matchups and stressing Notre Dame in some different ways. I do think that, you know, credit to O'Leary and Mickens, like, the secondary, I was pretty lukewarm on when the season started. I just thought it was like Kyle Hamilton and like some guys.
Podcast co-host.
Yeah. And it's definitely a lot more than that now. I mean, coming out of Tallahassee and then after getting benched against Toledo, you kind of wondered if like DJ Brown was in the mix at all the rest of the season. And he's played a ton the last 2 weeks. Cam Hart, Clarence Lewis, Truke Bracey was playing more now. The defense has a real way about itself. Like, as much as the offense, I think, is still trying to figure out, all right, is this who we want to be? Is this what we are? Do we just have to deal with this? Like, defensively, it seems like Notre Dame knows who it is, has an identity there. You know, Cam Hart even referenced Marcus Freeman's energy. That's certainly different from Clark
Lee. Got gold in practice. Yeah. I can't believe we never heard that in, like, the history of covering Notre Dame. Like, how's all the great coordinators they've had before never thought of got gold as,
exactly,
like, a turnover carrot. Yeah. I don't want to say turnover chain.
Yeah, it's it just feels like a group that knows who they are and what they did to Wisconsin today. I mean, Graham Mertz is... I don't want to spend much time on
Wisconsin.
I don't
either, but we couldn't stop saying... Everyone, we're looking at each other like, wait a minute, what?
I felt like... I mean, this is for... If you're sort of watching Notre Dame offensively and are concerned about throwing the ball as much as they are and the inefficiencies that they have offensively, like, I get it. But Notre Dame is at least trying to evolve and change who they are offensively to suit their personnel. I couldn't tell you what the heck Wisconsin is doing with Graham Mertz and Paul Christ right now. It looks like, let's just keep slamming our head against the wall that we've been slamming it into for a long time. And like, maybe that's just an admission, like, this is as good as it gets for Wisconsin. Like, they're not going to get over this like hump that they seem to think that they will.
You know, I think, from a program aspect of Wisconsin, I think a big part of the reason they invested so much in Mertz was because they wanted to try to evolve and try to do something different. Because there was a ceiling on what they were doing. And look, it was better than 90% of the programs out there. They won the Big Ten West almost every year, were good for 10 wins in a major bowl game every year, and would just not be ready to face an opponent the caliber of Ohio State or someone really strong in non-conference play. And that's fine. Like, they're working with, I know it's a Big Ten school, but they have a way of doing business there that is a lot different than most blue bloods. And they do more with less, better than anyone. You look at their walk-on program, you look at all the great players they put in the NFL who are not highly recruited. It's hard to question the formula behind what has made Wisconsin so good over the last 30 years. I do think part of getting Graham Mertz, best quarterback recruit in the recruiting era history there, was to and trying to develop him and investing so much in him to the point where you essentially discard Jack Cohn was, all right, we need to open things up. We need to try to recruit a little bit differently here. We need to evolve our offense to match most offenses in the 21st century to give us a chance to go somewhere beyond this self-imposed ceiling we have. And he ain't the guy for it. I mean, that much is clear. Is it as simple as, hey, we tried it, thanks, we'll go back to like competing with Iowa every year for the West and go 9-3 or 10-2. Or is it, hey, like, because they're recruiting much better at that position ever since Mertz got there. So I don't want to discount the impact he's made, but that's a tough one. I mean, if you're a Wisconsin fan walking out of here with what you've seen through three games so far and what you saw from everything but the opener from Graham Mertz last year, I mean, they got Michigan next week, another big noon game. That's at home. Camp Randall's always good, and Michigan's never really good in big road environments against teams with equal talent. So we'll see how that goes. But that's got to be one frustrating football team to watch if you're
a fan. There's no question. I don't know how good Wisconsin is ultimately going to be the rest of the year because Graham Mertz feels like he's just putting a cap on. He's the guy that was supposed to take you to the new level is taking you to the new level down. Like, it's not a... It's not a good situation there. I think by the end of the year, like, beating Wisconsin, while significant and emphatic and will definitely resonate, you're probably talking about a Wisconsin team that is 8-4 at best.
At best. I mean, they already have two losses.
Yeah.
They got to go to Iowa, I think. Right? Is that Iowa or is that at home?
I'm not sure where they go.
I think that's home. But, I mean, Iowa still looks, well, till today at least, looks really, really good. But, I mean, that Wisconsin, 1-14 on third downs, 0-1 on fourth downs. The Mertz line, since we haven't said it yet, 18-41, 240 yards, one touchdown, four picks. Kendrick Pryor and Danny Davis are fine, but, like, they haven't. We were talking to Jesse Temple, our old podcast guest and our Wisconsin writer, at halftime of this game. It's just like, when have they had, like, receivers? Like, Jared Aberdaris and Quintez Cephas is the only real one that comes to mind who was, like, a go-to target.
Right.
They've had good tight end play. They've had solid receivers. But, you know, as much as we talk about Notre Dame shortcomings at position coming into the year, like, it's two different leagues right now.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think it was a reminder that, oh, yeah, there's I think Wisconsin sort of likes to cast itself as, like, in Notre Dame's group of, like, well, if they made the playoff, we can make the playoff. Mm-hmm. No, you can't. Your skill position players are not good enough to do it. There's no Claypool, Boykin, Mayer.
Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, they have good backs, and I think their tight end is above average. But, you know, Notre Dame has depth up and down. And it's, you know, maybe this should have been something that registered more when Jack Cohn said it when I asked him in August about, you know, you get here and you hear about Kyron Williams and you hear about Michael Mayer. And at that point when Cohn committed, I think Tremble had not declared yet.
But you're, very nice touchdown run Thursday night, yes, by the way. I was watching that live.
But you're thinking, like, all right, I'm going to go to Notre Dame and I'm going to play in the same offense Ian Book played in, where we hand the ball off when we throw it to our tight ends. And then he got here and he's like, he saw Wilkins and Lindsey take big steps in the offseason. He saw the Kevin Austin that, you know, we saw at that one spring practice a couple years ago. And you're like, oh, this is a game-breaking type of receiver. And obviously saw Mayer as well. You know, Tyree has come on quite a bit. Like, Notre Dame just has so many avenues that it can go offensively at the skill positions that, you know, that's the only way you're going to make up for an offensive line that's struggling. But, you know, I think Jack Cohn, Drew Pine, Tyler Buckner, whoever's throwing it for Notre Dame moving forward, like, there's always somebody is always one-on-one who's, especially if it's Austin or Mayer or Tyree or Williams, is good enough to beat a guy one-on-one with regularity. And then, you know, occasionally you'll get a deep shot to Lindsey or Wilkins deep or a jump ball to Wilkins. Like, it's, I don't know. Notre Dame has just, there's a lot more levers to pull for Tommy Reese, and he needs all of them because, you know, the offensive line is just not where it needs to be right now.
What do we think about Jack Cohn moving forward, health-wise? I mean, Kelly basically said, I mean, he said he's our starter, and he said we expect him back this week. If you know anything about Brian Kelly, and we've written a hell of a lot about him in the last few days, he is the most overly optimistic person on planet Earth publicly when it comes to injuries. Someone could have their leg amputated. He's like, oh, he's fine. He'll be back in 3 months.
Like, yeah, it's just, like, well, Tyler Buckner was responding well to treatment. And then he's like, yeah, he didn't get reps.
He didn't practice.
Yeah, he was unavailable. Couldn't even play in the game.
40% went to Drew Pine, yeah. Like, Cohn was in a lot of freaking pain, like, watching him on that sideline come off. And, again, you're not exactly easing back into anything or easing anyone back into anything. They're in harm's way if they're playing quarterback for this team at this point. What do we think moving forward?
I mean, the guy came, dislocated a finger and threw a game-winning touchdown pass, so I don't feel like an ankle injury is going to be that serious. I'm not, you know, the way Kelly described it was like it's not even under consideration that you would rotate away from Jack Cohn as your starter. Like, maybe the reps will be divvied up differently. Buckner's supposed to be available for Cincinnati, wasn't available today. We'll see if that holds true, but you know, did Pine show you enough today to think about it? I don't think so, but he certainly showed you enough to feel confident you had to go to him, which is, I don't, you know, Notre Dame can say that they see it in practice all the time, but until you come out here in a game and actually do it, like, you're just sort of hoping that what you see on Tuesday will show up on a Saturday. Now you know. So it's kind of one of those things where, like, Notre Dame's quarterback room is better after today because Pine should be super, super confident in himself. And if Cohn can't go, Notre Dame will be fine. Like, they don't have to force it. I'm not saying that, you know, Drew Pine's going to go out and throw for 350 yards against Cincinnati, but they have other options there, which, you know, before today, I'm not sure how confident you really would be if you're Notre Dame until you saw it.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, they've gone deeper into that room and shown more from that room than they did last year when they had a guy who finished in the top 10 of the Heisman voting and ended up as the winningest quarterback in Notre Dame history, who was great, Ian Book. But if he went down, I had no idea what the hell was going to happen to really that whole team. Because that room was so green, and it was still so green until Jack Cohn came on in January as a graduate transfer. So I think they took important steps in the right direction just through circumstance with that alone, because the roof isn't caving in right now because Jack Cohn, their starting quarterback, got hurt, and Tyler Buckner, the quarterback of the future, I don't know. I mean, if he didn't practice at all this week, I doubt he's going to snap his fingers and be 100% next Saturday. He'll probably work his way back into it this week. Although, if we're talking about a hamstring and the guy's in there for one thing and the defense knows he's in there for one thing, that would severely limit whatever package you want to try to put him in. You have to at least feel comfortable, for lack of a better term, of what you got out of Drew Pine today. Because, again, I don't think that happens in most programs. I don't mean to sound like homery here, but like, I don't think there are too many good programs where you have a third stringer who has been under the guise of a quarterback competition for a while now, that he never had a chance winning, who comes right in and moves the ball pretty well and ends up closing out the game and winning the game.
Yep. All right, let me wrap up on this, because this was a question in my mailbag that now is relevant. Because somebody asked me, if Notre Dame beats Wisconsin, will it change your perception of the team? And I was like, that question's a week early. Like, if you beat Wisconsin and Cincinnati, then we can talk about that. But does today make you feel any different about next week? Does today make you feel any different about the next 2 months?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you take away the final score. I ended at 17-13 for all I care when Notre Dame took their final lead, their first score to take the lead in the fourth quarter. I think what was Seal saying? The best part about being 4-0 is the chance to go 5-0. Like, I think you feel it's a team that is going to get more and more confident week after week. Brian Kelly referenced, you know, people trying to put us in a box and figuring out who we are, and we don't know who we are. I think that's fair outside of one position. Like, the line is what it is right now, and you got to deal with that. But I think the defense took important steps in the right direction. I think the receivers got back on the right track after a subpar performance last week, and they got through, like, they survived what in theory should be the toughest test for that offensive line. They're obviously going to be more tough tests along the way, and people are going to learn to attack this team different ways defensively. But I think, yeah, I mean, I'm certainly more optimistic after they beat Wisconsin and feel better about their chances of going. 10-2 was not in my brain last week. It's definitely in my brain right now. Like, I think that is possible. I feel a lot better about this team after today.
I think, yeah, after today and picking Wisconsin to win, which I really should have stuck with my initial reaction when we did last week's.
I got stopped by multiple tailgaters. They very, very friendly, by the way, not like at all like talking. They're like, I hope you're wrong, but I think you're right. Like, this does look like a good matchup for us, blah, blah, blah. But yeah,
I mean, it's just
look at the box score. Like, if I showed you this box score, just like I did Purdue's last week, you'd be like, yeah, I don't know how they win that one.
It's just one of those things where I don't think Notre Dame's going to go 12-0, but I don't know that I will pick Notre Dame to lose a game until after they have already lost one, if that makes sense. Like,
that makes
after
sense.
Today, like, I cannot.
Like, the streaks, well, I guess this was a ranked game, but the streaks, the home streaks, right, the non-ranked teams.
Yeah, the home.
It's all still there.
All that's still happening. So that, look, Notre Dame is in a good spot mentally. They've got some guys who are developing, as Brian Kelly said, and to be 4-0, headed to Cincinnati at home, you know, this was your toughest sort of road-ish venue that you're going to play in, right? Like, I mean, I guess Blacksburg, but I don't know how good Virginia Tech is. So, I don't know, Notre Dame's in a spot where they could get on a roll here, and, like, if they were 6-0 going in the bye week before USC, wouldn't surprise me at all at this point. Like, I think that that's the headspace that they're in all of a sudden.
It's a weird year throughout college football. I think we've seen this everywhere. Clemson has already lost a game, almost lost another. I don't know what they're doing right now against NC State. Ohio State's already lost the game. It looks like a complete mess defensively. Alabama, still Alabama, but they almost lost last week, and I think have a much tougher schedule than I think any of us initially anticipated. I think in a year like this one, if you can look up at the end of the first month and say you're undefeated, I don't really care how you got there. Like, that's something to pat yourself on the back for, regardless of your shortcomings or your potential. I mean, Brian Kelly said some version of this postgame. He said, you know, this isn't a perfect team, but I know we're going to be better in November. And again, I like the headspace of this group right now. And that headspace is only going to get better the more and more they win against names like Wisconsin, regardless of what the personnel is on the field today. I think that goes a long way for this group to beat a top 20 program away from home with the nation's eyes watching every play today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, we'll wrap up here from a top Soldier Field. Notre Dame 41, Wisconsin 13, just like we all predicted. And Notre Dame heads into Cincinnati at 4-0. Should be a top 10 game.
If you bet the under and you see me in South Bend this year, I will buy you a drink because I feel that bad for you.
Yeah, that was the most confident I think we were of all the betting lines today. So Notre Dame 41, Wisconsin 13. He's Matt. I'm Pete. You've been listening to the latest episode of The Shamrock.